are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and We Saw the Devil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello, everyone. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin. And once again, Brittany has joined me to discuss the Gabby Petito case. It has been an absolutely crazy news cycle, as I'm sure all of you who have been following the case are aware of. There is so much information that is circulating online, on social media, on the television, other podcasts, and it can be overwhelming to discern what is fact from fiction. So we decided to take this opportunity to do a base episode, basically what we know now, things that we know to be true, and create the timeline that is backed by all of these facts. Also, at the end of the episode, we will be discussing things that have not been confirmed, that we see continuously recycled through social media, that people are believing that maybe things have gone viral, as well as unconfirmed things. This is going to be a fairly lengthy episode, so please strap in. I have not forgotten about Barry Morphew's arrest affidavit. I just wanted to really get this episode out because we are in a crucial time in this case. We're now in a federal manhunt, and I really wanted to get this episode pushed out first. But I will continue with the Suzanne Morphew case. Before we get into it, guys, let's just get our housekeeping out of the way. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. You can find us at WeSawTheDevil.com. From there, you can find us across all social media channels, as well as our Patreon. You can find us if you're liking the show, loving the show, want to financially back it, you can do so at patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. I did have it set so that our Patreon-only episode would be on September 20th, 4 days ago. Guys, I'm so sorry that this case has taken so much time. I will be doing the Patreon-only episode at the end of the month this month. I haven't forgotten about you. I'm getting there. And also for you patrons, we are doing the Halloween gift exchange again this year. Time is drawing nigh. You have about 2 more weeks to sign up for it. And in our Patreon, you can find the sign up link if you want to do the Halloween gift exchange for Halloween, where I pair you with another patron. And then you guys buy like cool, fun gifts based on preferences. So we had a blast doing that last year, and that is returning. Also, guys, we are giving away free shit. So go to WSDlove.com, and from there, you can enter. It takes 10 seconds. Just tell us your name, your preferences, and you enter. At the end of this month, I will be picking one person to buy a true crime gift for. Also, don't forget, you do get a second entry each month if you go to Apple iTunes, Stitcher, whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts and leave a 5-star review. You get a second entry for that month, and you can apply every month. I think that's all that I have for housekeeping, so let's just go ahead and get into the episode. Brittany, thank you so much for coming back. This is a case that we've been following closely together.
This one is so complex. I did not expect it to have the impact that it has.
No, completely. And you know, on our Facebook page, too, people have made comments because we've been posting a lot of the new developments as they happen. I try to stay on top of that as much as possible. And we did receive a comment of someone wondering why this case in particular is receiving so much attention. And, you know, speaking for myself and friends that I've spoken with personally about this, I think that it's actually, this is a very interesting phenomenon. This is a very interesting case. And I've been following true crime for years, and I don't think I've personally ever witnessed anything like it.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because I was thinking that this has seemed like completely wild as well. You get a lot of different parts that come together here, and now with the FBI stepping in, I mean, escalated to the utmost degree.
No, it absolutely has. And again, after talking to multiple friends, I think this is for a variety of different reasons. You know, speaking to men out there, what I think a lot of men in particular don't quite realize is that, I mean, all you have to do is look at statistics, right? Statistically speaking, most women have actually have had something in common with this case. You know, they may see pieces of themselves in Gabby herself. They may see traits of, you know, their toxic boyfriend and Brian. Like, this case has drawn a lot of people in because I feel like a lot of people can identify with different pieces of it, whether it's parent or child. I mean, it's just, it's touched, it really has touched everywhere.
And literally, too, the geographic region that this has spread is also, I think, part of why it has received so much national attention. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the domestic violence aspect of this is what could be really triggering for people, but the geographic region, I think, is another really big factor. It is playing into why so many people are following what is happening.
Absolutely. And then add on to that, the fact that this case has just been endless in the media. It's the first time that I've seen this much social media attached to it. There were YouTubers. They were starting hashtag van life and had a YouTube channel and an Instagram and TikTok. And they posted a lot of pictures documenting their life on the road. And so it's really easy for people to say, log on to Gabby's Instagram and try to follow along and create a timeline. And I can't even remember the last time that everything was this public, you know, people logging on and looking at the Instagram post, the most recent one, the last one. It's just, there's so much intrigue with it. And I think along with it being so public and played out on social media, it's led to a lot of negativity too. Like, there are some negative aspects of that, which we will probably get to later on in this episode. But yeah, I just had to kind of like bring that up, that it's just, this case is so intense. I've found myself being so incredibly invested in it and following it. And, you know, my heart has broken over it, really. And also too, this is what our listeners, this is what everyone has wanted us to cover. So this is the number one case that you subscribers, you listeners out there have asked us to cover.
We're going to go over everything start to finish. And there's even some new developments that have been happening tonight.
So, as we sat down to record.
Yeah. So we will cover everything start to finish. If you haven't been able to follow this case, whether that's because of all of the misinformation out there, which there is plenty.
Yeah.
We will walk through chronologically and kind of piece these different developments together in the order that you're going to need to feel like you're caught up on what's been happening in this case.
And to your point about the negativity, that was the negativity that I was speaking to, is there has been an incredible amount of negativity and misinformation in this case, which I guess is part of the social media effect, right? News and breaking news and cases like this with public interest, it has social media and greed and attention-seeking behavior to kind of contend with, too. So, we are going to go through the correct, confirmed, and valid timeline and everything that has been confirmed or validated by law enforcement. And then we will also identify things that have not been confirmed, because there is a lot of misinformation that has been taken as fact. So we're just pretty much going to lay out facts here in this episode of what is currently known and kind of identify some things that may not be along the way.
Well, let's go back to the beginning then.
If you would like to hear how Gabby and Brian met, or their early timeline and their early life, make sure to listen two episodes ago. Brittany and I discussed this case in length, kind of laying the ground information on it. So we're going to start with July 2nd. That's when Gabby and Brian decided to leave New York. They had started Nomadic Static, their little project of their van life. They were planning to document it on YouTube and Instagram. And so they set off from New York July 2nd.
And you can actually, this is, again, going back to the social media aspect, you can follow along with this. Gabby's Instagram and Brian's Instagram are still up and running as of right now. And you can actually see a lot of their travels starting from the start of this timeline.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You can literally follow along. So between July 4th and the 22nd, Gabby actually posted a series of photos. They traveled through Kansas, Colorado, Utah. They went to several national parks. In one of her captions on Instagram, again, you can follow it, she described the adventure of the trip. From July 26th to the 31st, she then posted several pictures from Utah. And in one of the photos, I know, Brittany, this is one of the ones that you took immediate interest in. It was at Mystic Hot Springs, and Brian Laundry was actually kissing her.
Yeah, when we were first looking at this, so at the time when we recorded, the only thing that had happened at that point was, wait a minute, this guy just like left his girlfriend and went back to Florida? That's where the case was at that time when I was starting to scroll through her Instagram feed. And it like stopped me in my tracks. The way that he has his hand around her face and neck, like part of her neck. It's not, in my opinion, it doesn't look romantic. It doesn't look caring. Like everything about the body language, it kind of felt controlling. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to read too far into it. In fact, so I didn't even tell you about how I felt about that photo. And we've been going through both Instagram feeds. So I didn't mention any of this until they actually found Gabby's body. But that photo, seeing the two of them together, my red flags went off right there. This kind of looks controlling.
I can completely see how you would think that. I did not myself pick up on that at first until you really told me to kind of zoom in and look at it. And I can completely see where you're coming from.
Yeah. I mean, I also recognize at the same time that a lot of their Instagram in general, like they were really trying to show just the beauty of the area. And, you know, there's that whole wanderlust vibe. So mm-hmm. were they playing into that? Who knows if this was even like them being real or if that was just like, hey, we saw this really cool pose on like Pinterest. Let's try it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It rubbed me wrong, though.
On August 12th, Gabby posted a picture from the Arches National Park in Utah and called it a calm morning. And then this is kind of where the timeline really, truly, I guess, begins, right? For like most media outlets and whatnot, is this phone call from the Moonflower Community Co-op.
Yeah. So this is the one that when we recorded last time together, this call had not been shared yet. Mm-hmm. All that we knew at the time was, oh, there may have been a domestic disturbance, but we don't have body cam footage yet. We don't have any of this. So if the last time you got updated on this case was our episode, this is what happened. People just in the area saw Brian chasing after Gabby, mm-hmm. hitting, slapping. And it was so jarring and so bad that they actually called the police, made that complaint. They made that complaint. And the police had to come out and respond to the entire incident.
Mm-hmm. Now, police actually had to pull over their van. It was actually swerving out of its lane when police pulled it over and Brian was driving. And this was in Moab.
Right. So they're in Utah. The person who actually spotted the violence at the time that Brian and Gabby were not in the car then, they were fighting outside of it, got back in, and then the police chased the van down. And now we have this body cam footage to analyze. And I think, I don't know about you, but I think for me, everything changed suddenly and my heart just sank the second we had body cam footage. Mm-hmm. I lost a lot of hope after watching Gabby break down.
Yes.
And I think that's right about the time when I was telling myself, like, this probably isn't going to end well. We're not going to have a successful rescue mission at this point.
That chest cam footage, I went through a variety of emotions when I watched that. And then looking back on it after knowing what we know now, I now have a completely different perspective. But yeah, that chest cam footage, she looked like she was distraught, beaten down, just she was having a complete and utter anxiety and panic attack. And then if you juxtapose that against Brian, calm, cool, collected, vibing with the police, kind of trying to befriend them, you know, like man to man type of thing.
My girlfriend,
yeah, she's crazy. And then the cop being like, I had one of those. That's why she's my ex. And seeing Gabby sitting in that car, the still shot that a lot of news outlets have been using of her sitting crying, sobbing, just sitting in the back of that police car. When I look at that, like, I still cry occasionally. It's just that to me just said everything that we really needed to know at that point.
It did. And then combining it with the fact that she was running from him. He was chasing after her to hit her. Mm-hmm. And here she is in the back of a police car. You look at her and she just looks childlike. Like mm-hmm. she's just like devastated. I can't think of a more vulnerable looking human at that point.
And she looks, and to your point of calling her childlike, she really looks like a scared little girl in the back of that car. And see, and that was another thing, guys. Don't forget that the caller, again, reported that Brian was chasing her, slapping, and hitting her. Now, when the police pulled over the van, immediately the story became that Gabby was slapping and hitting Brian.
And scratching.
He did have injuries, scratches on his face, like on the side of his head.
It's really sad because I can see both sides of how people say the police failed her, mm-hmm. right? They failed her. They should have seen these signs. They should have this, they should have that. And if that's how you feel, like, I get it, right? Like we resonate as women with usually the victim in true crime cases. Usually it's us. Mm-hmm. And it's hard not to want someone to have stepped in and, you know, done something. But I do just want to give some credit where it's due here. The police officers, did they vibe right away with Brian? Yes, and I hate it. However, they separated the two of them. They talked to each of them separately. One of the officers even told Gabby, your relationship looks kind of toxic. We have to give some credit. And as much as we, you know, have issues, I guess, on the many times in true crime where the police really screw things up, like mm-hmm. they miss things. In this case, I actually think the police did the best they could with what they could do.
They did. And one other part, too. Should police be trained in being able to recognize, mannerisms and behaviors due to domestic violence? Yes, absolutely. They should receive more training. I have no argument with that. That absolutely needs to become a bigger thing in this country. However, that being said, we have a caller who reported a male hitting a female. The police pull over the van. Both stories, right? Gabby and Brian say that she was the aggressor, both of them. Gabby immediately blamed herself, said, yes, I'm at fault. He didn't do anything at all. Being a police officer, the police now has the same story from both the aggressor and supposedly the victim. They could have put Gabby in jail. They had enough, yeah. They had enough information at that moment to put Gabby in jail. They could have done that. But I believe that they were looking at this little girl and just seeing these two kids, more or less. Were they adults? Absolutely. 22 and 23. But, from like a cop's perspective, they're still basically kids,
Mm-hmm.
They could have ruined her entire life with a domestic violence charge by putting her in jail that day. And they probably, yeah. and they didn't. They were just, well, let's just let them cool off. Like lovers quarrels, road trip, tensions high, blah, 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 whatever. I can completely mm-hmm. understand that. However, they did not press for information or investigate anything further based on the witness statement.
I get that, but if you're talking with the two people involved in a domestic dispute and things seem to be a little bit more calm and they're able to speak and, clearly they're not a danger to each other at this point and they're both saying that things got a little tense. I mean, I think they did the best they could. And I think this would be one of those things that they would say, you know what, to go above and beyond, we will use our own funds and we will put this kid in a hotel for the night and really give them time to cool off.
Mm-hmm.
I really respect how they handled it. Of course, I wish they had done more, but they didn't know how this was going to pan out. And I don't know about you. Did you watch the YouTube video of Brian and Gabby together, their intro video?
I did, yes.
To Nomadic Study. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brian seems like a sweetheart. He does. Like, he comes across as like this soft, gentle, kind dude.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I imagine, like most abusers, they're pretty dang good at coming across as likable, fun, maybe even like professional. It would be a good way to put his interactions. Like, he just seemed so put together.
They learn how to adapt. Yeah, I think that he's learned how to adapt and knows when to turn it on, most likely. Because don't forget, Gabby's best friend, Rose, said that they used to get into fights constantly, mm-hmm. and he hated her, but he would still be nice.
There's definitely an aspect of this that I think is worth discussing further. The signs of domestic violence in this, I really do want to keep discussing, but what happens after this fight?
So as you said, they separated them for the evening. Brian, on their own funds, went to a hotel. Gabby kept the van. So on August 13th, Brian Laundrie had been posting photos to his Instagram account. August 13th was the last time that he posted on Instagram, and it's still up. Between mm-hmm. August 17th and the 23rd, Brian Laundrie made a very suspicious trip. And this is a very, very important piece, too. He made a trip back home to Florida. Apparently, he went back to Florida, from what's understood, to help his dad move stuff, like his and Gabby's stuff, into a storage unit. This was first reported by Gabby's step-uncle. He basically wrote like a note, a handwritten note with a timeline on it, and then published it to Facebook and put it online. But yeah, supposedly Brian was gone from the 17th to the 23rd. During this time, Gabby launched the YouTube channel. While he was gone, she launched the YouTube channel. She also FaceTimed her dad, Joe. He also lives in Florida. She was staying in a hotel waiting for Brian in Salt Lake City. So another big piece is that on the 21st, the weather was really bad from the hurricane. Brittany and I discussed this in our previous episode as well. The hurricane brought really heavy rains, and she was having spotty Wi-Fi, so she was in the hotel, and her dad sent a pizza, a Domino's pizza, to the hotel. And that was the final time that her father would speak to her.
So I watched the Dr. Phil interview with Gabby's dad, where he's talking to Dr. Phil about where things left off and, you know, the last time that he spoke with Gabby. And it was actually really sweet. So in addition to, you know, getting her this pizza and saying, hey, if the power's out, I've got you. I'm going to order this for you. And you want to launch this website for your van life blog? Let's do this. And like, they were working together on this website. And I can actually confirm they were making changes together at least up through August 21st. It looks like there were some additional changes made after that as well.
That's really sweet.
The last changes that they made together were on the 21st. And I can see that. So he said in the Dr. Phil interview that she was stressed out. She couldn't get her email to work and couldn't get it to connect. And so here he is. He, you know, isn't there with her, but he is by, you know, getting her food and talking her through things and encouraging her. Like, you can do this. Let's figure it out together.
That's really sweet.
I'm so glad that they had that together, mm-hmm. that it was just such a wholesome thing for them.
No, absolutely. That is really wholesome and sweet. And that was on the 21st. So on the 24th, Gabby and Brian are seen together at that hotel in Salt Lake City. So obviously they depart together. Hence why people are placing Brian back in Salt Lake on the 23rd is kind of like the unconfirmed date that he supposedly came back from Florida. And then we have the August 25th Instagram post, which is, this is actually, I believe, what made it primarily go viral in the beginning. In this Instagram post, Gabby made it's a picture, and she's holding a little small crocheted pumpkin, and the caption of the post says, Happy Halloween. Now, keep in mind, this post was made on August 25th, and it says, Happy Halloween. Also,
that one weirded me out too.
Yeah. And also, for the first time, there's no location information tagged on the photo like all of her previous photos have been. Keep in mind, Brittany, I think the point that you made up is this is her brand. That's why she has the location always on.
Right. So, in your opinion, is this where maybe Brian is starting to get controlling over this? Or, I mean, why would that get turned off?
That's a great question. Initial speculation back when we recorded the last episode was something happened to Gabby and Brian had her phone. We now know that this is not the case and she was alive at this time. Mm-hmm. This photo was at the Monarch in Ogden, Utah. It's about an hour long drive from Salt Lake City. This is also the day that she also FaceTimed with her mom. So she FaceTimed with her mom and she told her that she was in Grand Teton National Park, Wyoming, and that they were going to stay there for roughly 2 to 3 days.
Now, going back as well, in our last conversation about this, Gabby was really close with her parents. Her parents were divorced and each of them have since remarried. Mm-hmm. And she was close with all of her parents. She would talk with them every 3 days or so.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, watching that Dr. Phil interview with her dad, he said, oh, I had no issues. I knew Brian. They'd done a trip like this already before. They'd already driven all the way out to California. So it wasn't like for her parents to get nervous, it would take a lot because they already had so much trust in her ability to travel and she was safe and she was always checking in. So when they started to get scared, we need to keep in mind that their threshold was a little bit more sensitive because there were patterns that they were used to with mm-hmm. her traveling.
Correct. Yes. It was like clockwork. Every 3 days, check in.
And FaceTime usually.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they would see her, they'd hear her. her mom would talk about how she was always getting text messages too of these beautiful places that they would see. So when that stopped, red flags started going up for her parents.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So then we'll go on to the 26th. So on August 26th, there's a shop in Victor, Idaho called Rustic Row. And this was actually the very first sighting to come out of them when this case started to hit the news. So the owner of the Rustic Row in Victor, Idaho said that both Gabby and Brian came into the shop that afternoon. They stayed there for about 20 minutes and then they left. And on the way out the door, Gabby turned around and said, you know, like, we're engaged. This is my fiance. We're going to get married. And then they left. That supposedly occurred on the 25th/26th. The owner doesn't remember the exact day, doesn't have security footage, but they maintain that it did happen. And then they spoke with the FBI about it.
So they were in the Jackson Hole area. Then Victor's right in that same area. They've made their way out of Utah and they're just kind of like in the Jackson Hole, Victor, Driggs. It's kind of this like mountain city type place, very touristy, mm-hmm. but like still super outdoorsy at the same time.
Thank you for that context, too. I am not familiar with this area in any way, shape, or form. So yet again, Brittany, you're forced to help on a case because of your location. Hashtag
I'm
blessed.
I'm waiting for someone else to be Mormon and physically in this area to relieve me of my duties.
On August 27th, this is the red flag day. Gabby's mom received a text message from Gabby, and she said that it was just a little weird because it didn't seem like it came from Gabby. And the text was, quote, "Can you help Stan? I just keep getting his voicemails and missed calls." Now, Stan was her grandfather, and she's never actually called her grandfather by his first name like that before. So that was very, very bizarre to Gabby's mom as well. Earlier in the day, before she texted her mom, though, she Snapchatted with a friend and said that she's headed to Yellowstone.
Which, for, I know there's like a lot of confusion because, again, the geographic area. Yellowstone, if you wanted to go to actually go through Yellowstone Park, you can easily go to the west entrance of Yellowstone National Park. That would totally be, you know, along their path. They were in Jackson. They were going around to Grand Teton National Park. The west entrance of Yellowstone National Park is right there. So I know there's been some confusion, lots of misinformation because people are mixing up Yellowstone with Yosemite. Mm-hmm. So just keep that in mind. There are multiple entrances to Yellowstone National Park, and this fits perfectly with what they were doing.
Yosemite is actually about 1,000 miles away from where they were in Yellowstone, right?
Right. And on top of that, I mean, keep in mind, too, I'm sure that Gabby had awesome plans to go to all these incredibly beautiful places. So it very well could be that there's a post out there saying that she had plans, or maybe she texted a friend saying that that was somewhere she wanted to go.
Now, don't forget, guys, that their ultimate stop, where they were, what they were doing is they were going to actually make it to Portland, Oregon by Halloween. That was actually their destination. So they were planning on traveling, going to Yellowstone, Grand Teton, Yosemite, all of these places, like kind of looping around on the way up to Portland.
So it's just, I guess, knowing that, it is really interesting to see that there was a whole week that they kind of wasted in Utah mm-hmm. a little bit with Brian's traveling too.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so about 1 o'clock on the 27th, Gabby and Brian were seen at Mary Piglet's in Jackson, Wyoming. And this is very, very interesting. If you haven't seen the Instagram channel, a woman witnessed this. She has spoken with the FBI. She's spoken with all law enforcement. And the Mary Piglet's in Jackson, they've also confirmed themselves that Gabby and Brian were there. So 1 p.m., Gabby and Brian are there. They eat. And apparently, Brian had an absolute shit fit. He had a fit. He was agitated. He was aggressive. He was yelling. He was screaming. He was like kind of like slinging his hands around and pointing in the face. An altercation with a waitress, apparently. Brian was just really agitated and upset. Gabby went outside. She was crying, sobbing. She was pacing and then sitting on the sidewalk outside. Brian apparently was in the restaurant and then left and then came back a total of 4 times and then just mm-hmm. kept going and going off.
Just to throw this out there too, the Merry Piglets, it's this Mexican restaurant, and in Jackson Hole, there's like one main street, really. Everything's on this street. It's a cute little boardwalk along both sides. So for him to be going in and out, and for Gabby to be sitting right there, I just want to like kind of help paint this picture. There are probably so many people walking by. The city totally comes alive in the summer. It's their busiest time of year, I would say, for tourists. So lots of people probably saw this little girl basically crying outside and this guy who's agitated about God knows what going in and out of this restaurant. It's a very busy place. It's a well-known restaurant. I'm sure we are going to continue to see more and more and more reports of them in the Jackson Hole area, just given how touristy it is.
That's interesting that more hasn't come out already.
I'm sure we're going to keep seeing it. I mean, we're going to get to this soon, but there was even something tonight that came out because someone else saw something on social media.
Yeah.
Social media has played a huge role in this case because it's sparking so many people going, oh yeah, I was there about that time. Let me check my pictures or let me see my videos that I was taking. I think it's pretty safe to say that we wouldn't have the information we do right now without the help of social media.
Completely agree. I mean, social media is why this case has become as big as it has, partially. So after this altercation at the Merry Piglets, Gabby's phone Snapchats a friend and says that they're headed to Yellowstone National Park. Now, here, guys, is probably the single-handed most important piece of evidence so far as witness, right? Witness evidence, witness testimony that has happened so far in this case. Between 6 and 6:30, two YouTubers, their channel is known as Red, White, and is it Bethune?
They I think
so. Drive by a van twice in the same area of Spread Creek.
Spread Creek Campground, it's this basically just like open area. It's not like a traditional campground that you would find near Jackson Hole where there's campsites. Mm-hmm. So it's a little less organized in that way. It's awesome if you're kind of an off the grid kind of person the way that Gabby and Brian were. It's great because there's not like reservations you have to make for a spot. You can just roll in, find a spot. You might pay a fee at the entrance area, but then after that, it's on you. You've got lots of privacy. This area, in terms of like geography, there is a little creek that runs by. There's not a ton of cover. It's a little bit more open. So don't think of it as like a really thick forest. It's a little bit more sparse.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah. And the overhead, it really was not what I was expecting when I Googled it and did searches of what it looks like. It's not at all what I expected. So to get a better visualization, highly recommend that you Google image search this.
Or if you ever watched, if you ever watched the show Yellowstone, where I think that obviously is not that applicable to this, but it's more like that where you think like a high desert. Mm-hmm. So a little bit more open, lots of aspen trees. Lots of sagebrush, you've got gorgeous mountains, in the distance, but it's not this really like dense forest that you would expect.
It's more like clearings and like not plains necessarily. There are trees and stuff, but yeah, it's definitely not heavily like vegetation.
Right. This van, these YouTubers that saw the van twice, the significance of that is that they drove in and then they drove out and the van was still there in the exact same area.
Mm-hmm. So they had their phone recording. They had their camera recording as they were driving. And it's really, really, really eerie because they have their camera as they're driving down this road and Gabby and Brian's van. And we know this, guys, because we have matched the stickers. I mean, it's confirmed, right? The FBI and law enforcement, everybody's confirmed it was their van. But yes. Because it matched also the stickers on the back too, exact same place, exact same style, like it was their van. So they're recording and they're driving slowly and you can actually see in the video that the back van doors were open. And as they come closer, say like if someone had been in the van and heard a car approaching, the van doors slowly close.
Ugh,
as they come up.
That part.
Oh,
that's so eerie.
They have a video that shows it in slow motion and it is terrifying. the Red, White, and Bethune, the YouTubers, slowly, you know, drive around. They're just like, oh, well, you know, look at that van. And then you just see the door slowly shut. And you don't see it if you've only seen the original video. It's only when it's slowed down can you see that.
Okay, now I feel better. Like, how did I miss that?
Yeah, people have really started analyzing the video, and very, very clearly the van doors were like 80% shut. And then when, you know, say Brian or Gabby or whoever was in that van heard the car approaching, they closed them the rest of the way. So they drive around, and that was between 6 and 6:30 on August 27th. And again, that was in the Spread Creek dispersed camping.
Now, the distance away, just to kind of like help anyone out again for like geographic area, it's a little bit of a drive to go between this campground and then these other places. It's not really, really, really far out of the way, but it's a little bit more of a drive. You're talking 45 minutes from their restaurant to this campground that they went to. Gorgeous drive, but it is a little bit out of the way. So to say that like he would have had privacy and whatnot, he's definitely out of the way at this point. Even though there might not be a lot of cover in the area, there wouldn't be a ton of people. So the next sighting of Brian, at this point going forward, there are no mentions of Gabby and anything else that's come forward at this point. The last that people have seen Gabby would be on the 27th.
Correct.
On the 29th, Brian is up at Coulter Bay Village. It's north of the Jackson Lake Dam. So it's a ways up there. Probably some decent hiking in that area, actually. I know that he liked hiking, so I can imagine that he was there. And he wanted to hitch a ride, basically to get probably closer back to the campground. And he hitches a ride from Miranda Baker. She's the one that she went on TikTok and Instagram, I believe, and was talking about how he was this nice, clean looking dude, did not look like he'd been roughing it for a week camping. And he offered her like $200 for gas money along the way for this really short ride of, if he was going from Coulter Bay back to the campsite, you're talking a 30, 35 minute drive, $200 for that. That's insane.
Now, here's my question. I am currently looking at a map. Now, you know this region, the geographical area, way better than I do. So here's my question for you. He asked Miranda and her boyfriend, are you heading to Jackson? That's where I'm headed, is Jackson. And they said, yeah, we're headed to Jackson. So if you look at the map of Coulter Bay, and then you look at Jackson way farther south, why did he say he was going to Jackson? Was he just trying to get them to go in that general vicinity, like in that direction south?
Yeah, I would say that if you were giving someone directions of like where you wanted to go from there, you would say, oh, I'm either headed back to Jackson or I'm heading towards the west entrance of Yellowstone. Those are like your two big touristy things that would be north if you wanted to go to Yellowstone, or south if you wanted to go to Jackson. And Coulter Bay is basically right in the middle.
Now, he did tell them that his fiance was back in the van working on social media and stuff like that.
That's right.
Miranda and her boyfriend ended up taking Teton Park Road instead of Highway 191, which would have gone back over to the Spread Creek dispersed campsite, like headed towards that way.
Basically, picture like there's this giant in between area. So you can either take the faster route and take the highway, or you can take this kind of more roundabout scenic way instead, which would be further away from the van, like as far away as you can be with while still heading towards Jackson. If you were trying to avoid the main areas that maybe police officers would be driving to rush to find someone, this is the route you would take. You would want to get off of 191 and you would take Teton Park Road. Brian asks Miranda, hey, where are you guys going? And she says, we're going to Jackson. And this is where Brian freaks out. He says, nope, I need to get out of the car right now. Pull over. So they ended up pulling over at Jackson Lake Dam. So they haven't gone very far at all between Coulter Bay and the dam. And the dam is actually, I wouldn't say like super close to the campground, but he's significantly closer to it. If he was trying to avoid main roads and that sort of thing, pulling over at Jackson Lake Dam gives him that opportunity to avoid 191 and stay on Teton Park Road.
Oh, that's interesting.
He tells Miranda, thanks. He's polite. It's weird. But he says he's going to find someone else to give him a ride.
And he does, because literally just minutes before Brittany and I started recording this, another woman has come forward. Norma Jean Jalovic claims that she picked up Brian at the dam, at the Jackson Dam, and dropped him off at the gate of Spread Creek camping area.
Right.
She said around like 6:30 or so, right? So 20 minutes or so after Miranda Baker and her boyfriend dropped him off, they dropped him off around, like they said, about 6:10 or so, 6:09, 6:10. About 20 minutes later, he hitchhiked with Norma Jean Jalovec and had her take him all the way to the front gate of the Spread Creek camping area.
It's so interesting, too, because she was saying, oh, no, I'll get you closer, because, again, it's dispersed camping area. There's not campsites. So it's kind of this like weird free for all type situation. And so she was trying to be nice, like, no, obviously I'll drive you to your spot, like wherever you are. And he like adamantly said, no, like, leave me here. I'll walk in. He did not want anyone to get close to where this van was.
No. And he even said, my fiance is in the van. She's been working on YouTube. You know, I'm going to impress her that I hiked all the way back myself, is what he told her.
Ugh.
Yeah.
The one thing that's kind of interesting about her whole story, too, and this is just like, it has, you know, not a huge bearing on the case, but she said that she had to take this really sharp right turn out of nowhere. And she had just been to a church and gone to a service, and her Bible was on the dash. And during this right turn, the Bible falls and lands in Brian's lap. And I just have to wonder, I mean, I'm not a spiritual person or a religious person, but that had to have been something to him. We can assume at this point he has already killed Gabby, and this Bible falls into his lap as he's trying to like begin the start of covering things up.
I can't imagine.
I have to wonder what that must have been like.
What he thought if he registered that?
Yeah. Like, did he have a pang of guilt? Was that the first time he started to feel bad? Or is he the monster that we kind of all think he is, and that was just nothing to him?
That's a good question. That is the last time that Brian was, that we have as far as witness in that particular area, that region.
Right.
So the next day, Gabby's mom received the text message, no service in Yosemite, which, again, as I stated earlier, where they are, it's 1,000 miles away. Not close. It wasn't even on the current itinerary that they had. Hadn't even told her mom that they were going there. And that was that. That was the very last time that Gabby's phone sent her mom a message in any way.
So at this point, we can assume that the parents are starting to get a bit nervous. She's missed a few phone calls. Gabby's missed a few phone calls to her family.
Mm-hmm.
She hasn't been posting regularly on social media the way that she had before. Now we are in September.
And this is where things start to happen relatively quickly, guys. September 1st, it's reported that Brian Laundrie returned home to Northport, Florida, and he was, in fact, in that white van. And then we have new information that came out earlier today that his neighbors, next-door neighbors, finally spoke up. And they said that about a week after Brian got home, so that would put him, you know, somewhere around like the 7th or so, that he and his family, they have a brand new, was it like a pole camper to go over the back of a pickup?
Yeah, so it's just one of those ones that just go in the bed of a pickup truck. They're these really awkward shapes, but they're actually super expensive. And from what I saw in the picture, it looked relatively new.
Yeah.
If it was, in fact, brand new, his parents probably dropped like $60,000 on this.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
So Brian went on a camping trip with his parents, and the neighbors actually noticed this and thought it was really odd that, you know, a 23-year-old guy would go camping in close quarters like that with his parents.
Because it can only fit in the back of a truck. Like, the idea, imagine 3 grown adults sleeping and living in the bed of a pickup truck. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a lot of room.
At all.
No. That's the kind of trailer that you get when it's like, we are going to be going some really sketchy places. We need something that's going to just be able to rough it. That's the trailer you get. If you're going to be going off-roading, if you're going to be going some really like in the deep, deep woods, that's what you get, because you can go more places and not worry about, you know, a hitch and towing something behind you and dealing with a lot of terrain, you can just go.
I never knew that. Thank you.
There you go.
I was like, why do people get that?
They're definitely not pretty looking. No. And they're not that comfortable at all. This would be a downgrade probably for Brian having lived in the camper van to this.
That happened. He came back like somewhere around like middle of like what? If they left, say, around the 7th or so, they were gone for that weekend, that first weekend of September, came back. By September 11th is when Gabby Petito's family, they were finally able to report her missing to police in Suffolk County, New York, where she was from, where they live.
And the reason they had to wait was really specific and weird. I didn't realize that there was like a waiting period for these sorts of situations.
Yeah, they had a variety of different rules due to her age, due to her location, due to the fact that she was, quote unquote, like on vacation. There were a variety of different hoops that they kind of had to go through in bureaucratic red tape before they were finally able to report her missing.
And so September 11th, though, they kick off right away. It's not like they, as soon as they reported her missing, police got started.
Immediately.
Mm-hmm.
By September 14th, Brian Laundrie's family issued a statement that Brian had retained an attorney and will not be speaking to law enforcement. Also on the 14th, police actually show up at the Laundrie home and they were directed to speak to the family's attorney. And this is kind of the point where it started to hit media a little bit because people started recognizing, you know, she's missing. What is going on? The police were able, because that missing persons report in Suffolk County happened, they were able to seize that white van at Brian's parents' home there in Northport.
So, and during this time, everyone was saying, oh, Brian's inside. Back then, everyone thought, oh, he's not even coming outside right now.
Yeah, no one knew where he was. But here's the thing, the local Northport police, we weren't very hard on the police in Moab. You know, we gave them every benefit of the doubt. I truly do believe they did the best that they, you know, were trained in the tools that they were equipped with in that moment. Yeah. Northport police, different story, guys. They seize the van. They try to talk to Brian. He's lawyered up. Talk to the attorney. He's refusing. And then the attorney for the Laundries issues the following statement. He said, quote, "This is understandably an extremely difficult time for both the Petito family and the Laundrie family. It is our understanding that a search has been organized for Miss Petito in or near Grand Teton National Park, Wyoming. On behalf of the Laundrie family, it is our hope that the search for Miss Petito is successful and that Miss Petito is reunited with her family. On the advice of counsel, the Laundrie family is remaining in the background at this juncture and will have no further comment."
Yeah.
How did you feel when you read that?
Oh, all of that. I was so livid. Any chance this fucking family has had to make themselves the victim, they have, and it's somehow more disgusting each time.
They continuously outdo themselves.
Yeah. And the lawyer, like, anything that can be disgusting, he will do. Like, it just, the family, Gabby's family puts out a statement and then he throws one out too. And it's like, this is not about you.
Yes.
Holy cow.
Stephen Bertolino. So,
I can't stand him. All of his statements drive me nuts. It's almost like if you were trying to screw up, these are the statements you would write.
Yep.
I'm so glad that the police there felt the same way because the very next day they're like, yeah, he's a person of interest. We are looking for Brian.
And thankfully, now, mind you guys, every day we're getting an update. People are asking the police, do you know where Brian is? He hasn't been seen. Do you know where he is? And the police say, yes, we know where he is at all times. The police, almost on a daily basis, like multiple times a day, have said they know exactly where Brian is. We'd just like to make sure that everyone is aware of that.
But this is where things get a little bit interesting, because then the lawyer comes out and says, on behalf of the Laundrie family, we just also would like to report Brian missing. So help us find him too.
Right.
And everyone was like, excuse me? Like, what? We had one job. Like, we needed him to not go anywhere so that we could, you know, see him get arrested. I wanted a perp walk. I thought for sure we were watching, you know, people protest outside of this guy's house or his parents' house. People were straight up protesting, ordering pizzas to
the door.
People who were protesting to have him come out. And then the lawyer says, yeah, we actually don't know where he is. The last time we saw him, you know, he went hiking by himself and he didn't have his wallet or his phone and he acted really sad. And it was like, are you fucking kidding me right now?
Yeah. On September 17th, His parents come out, call the police. There was a big police presence. I watched it live as it unfolded. You know, there were a bunch of police that showed up to their house, and everybody was like, yeah, we're about to have a perp walk. He's about to be arrested. And we were waiting and waiting, and then the police leave. They take bags of evidence, you know, from the house, from the home with them. Mm-hmm. And we're like wondering what kind of evidence they gathered and so on and so forth. Well, turns out, guys, it was his parents reporting him missing. That was the 17th. He had been gone. They say they hadn't seen him since the 14th, 3 days earlier. Like Brittany said, he supposedly got his stuff and, you know, wanted to go camping, and he was sad. They were afraid that he was going to hurt himself. And likely the evidence that we saw being removed from the home was something like clothing, or, you know, something that could give like dog scent, or, you know, evidence as far as like with a missing persons case.
Right. And where did his parents point authorities?
His parents said that he went to go hiking in the Carlton Reserve, and that's kind of like a nearby 10-15 minute, to my understanding, wilderness reserve where he used to go all the time camping and hiking. Now, mind you as well that this place, there's been a considerable amount of rain there. It's flooded. It is absolutely infested with venomous snakes as well as alligators.
Oh, and then some. I actually just want to throw this out there. The top 10 most dangerous things that exist in Florida that he could have encountered. Okay? And this is entirely real. Did you know there's jellyfish?
What?
There's jelly. Yeah. There's all kinds of crazy freaking spiders. They have wild boars. Alligators. Sharks have been seen. Did you know Florida had panthers?
I did, but that's crazy that it's they're there.
Fire ants. I mean, like, this is not a fun place. And yeah, like, it just, it's disgusting. Florida's gross on its own, but the Carlton Reserve in Florida is extra gross. So this area is actually really close to where Brian's parents' house is. It's not that far away at all. I kind of thought it'd be like in the middle of nowhere. It's kind of just right outside the suburb areas. It's interesting that you can go from city to just like places that even the police are like, can we stop searching, please? This is horrible. We hate this part of our job.
I can imagine. And watching pictures of them wading knee deep in the swamp, they even have boats. I especially feel bad for the divers. They have a whole diving team there. I know.
God, could not do this. I don't know if there's a chance that anyone out here is a professional diver, but I would love to see just like a horror story of the worst things that you've seen diving, because seeing this list of the most dangerous things you can encounter in Florida, and then like you're going into somewhere that's like untouched, I cannot begin to imagine how disgusting this is.
Well, within like the first day or two of this, of their search, guys, they actually found a dead body. But it wasn't, yeah, within like day two, I believe, of the search, I think it was like, you can verify this, but on like the 18th, I believe, they actually found a dead body in the reserve.
I mean, it's 24,000 acres. I mean, this is a huge, like, expanse of area that, I mean, it's just massive. I don't even know how you would begin to search this, but of course there's going to be dead bodies in there. Oh my word.
Yeah, they found someone who had committed suicide in there. So that was another false, like, misinformation campaign that hit the internet, because they did in fact find a body. And see, what happens in a lot of these cases is that people listen to the scanners, to the police scanners, and every single crumb that they get, every key word that they hear, they immediately associate it and assign it to whatever case they're interested in, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a body found, and everybody's like, oh my God, Brian killed himself in the reserve. And then there we go, viral. It went viral on Twitter.
Right.
Was not the case. It was a random, I mean, obviously not random. That's very like callous sounding, but it was a person not associated with this case.
Well, and I think this is where the misinformation really, we have to be careful with, because there are now, you know, you have an actual manhunt. And so everyone is on the lookout for a young white male with, you know, facial hair, medium build. I mean, that's like 70% of like dudes. And so I feel so bad for everyone who's been trying to keep track of this case, because you have to sift through like conspiracy theories and random sightings that aren't even legitimate whatsoever. So if you've felt confused while trying to follow this, just know that you're validated. This is really hard to follow when you have people trying to figure it out and putting their theories together instead of saying, well, this is what's been reported. Mm-hmm. This is what has been verified already.
Absolutely. 100%. So as of the 17th, we were in manhunt mode. Again, he was just a person of interest, not yet a formal suspect. On the 19th, unfortunately, and this was the day that I did my last update on this case, is I announced that a body had been recovered in Bridger-Teton National Forest in Wyoming. It was less than 1,000 feet from where the Red, White, and Bethune bloggers who videoed the van and the doors closing and everything near Spread Creek Dispersed Campground. Her body was, in fact, found less than 1,000 feet from that spot. At that point, things started to change, but Brian still yet wasn't considered a formal a suspect in this. He was still a person of interest.
The press conference, too, if you didn't watch that when that happened, when they announced that they had found a body, that was really hard to watch. The FBI agent was breaking down quite a bit, and it was just devastating. Obviously, everyone kind of thought that this might be the case, that, you know, something bad probably happened to her. But anytime you see that press conference and you see these agents who they spent so much time searching, her stepfather flew out to help search as well. You have people searching in Florida to have, you know, the worst fear come out. I mean, that day was when it just really seemed to hit everyone. After the 19th, they did confirm through an autopsy her death was ruled as a homicide. Is there any significance to that, in your opinion, having it ruled a homicide right away?
So we have a Discord, and if you're interested in discussing this case, Lori Vallow, any others, check out our show notes. You'll see the link to it, as well as if you're on YouTube, you can click the link there and come to our Discord where we discuss all of these cases, basically all day long, in depth. But one of our members is an attorney, and she actually defined it as follows. Homicide versus murder is going to be state specific at times, but typically homicide is the intentional killing of another, and murder is the intentional killing of another with malice aforethought. Okay, so earlier today, Brian Laundry officially became a suspect, and a warrant was actually issued for his arrest, which this is the moment that we have all been waiting for. But it didn't happen for reasons that we kind of expected, I guess. Okay, so a news release from the FBI stated that a federal arrest warrant for Brian Christopher Laundry was issued. It was related to Mr. Laundry's activities following the death of Gabrielle Petito, and it is in regards to use of unauthorized access device.
So it reminds me a lot of how we all knew Lori Vallow was up to no good, but they couldn't necessarily prove that something had happened to the kids yet. And so they got her on, you know, neglect and endangerment and what was, you know, basically just some quick charges to get them in custody. Yes. So you can kind of keep working on the case. It kind of reminds me of that.
That's exactly what is happening. So use of unauthorized access devices. What does that mean? It is the unauthorized use of any type of access device entity, such as a credit or debit card issued to another individual. So as Brittany just said, it's kind of like their quick short pass in football to get him arrested because he did utilize her debit or credit card to the tune of $1,000. Apparently on his trip back home, at least somewhere, we don't know the specifics yet, but the FBI believes or knows that A, obviously he wasn't the owner of the card and she was already deceased at that point.
So it's enough to at least say, okay, let's get him in custody and then keep working on this case, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So that happened earlier today, which huge news, manhunt, he is a suspect now. Also
with
today,
a bounty on his head.
Yeah, another attorney in Northport actually offered a $20,000 reward for information leading to his capture and arrest.
I really think, though, that that's Florida for bounty, right?
Right. Okay. Can someone from Florida translate?
I've been looking at a lot of these kind of local Facebook pages in Florida to see what are people saying, you know, that are around this area where these searches are taking place. And everyone is saying everyone here has a gun. This is the dumbest place to try and hide. Everyone has a gun.
Good luck.
It reminds me of home, guys. It's like Idaho, except sweaty and gross.
I'm in Tennessee and it is also sweaty and gross here, but not swampy.
Not swampy.
We do have a lot of guns, though. So yeah, also today, aside from the great news of him becoming an official suspect, now that has opened up more resources, right, for the FBI to have, you know, more manhunt power, more people on this case, more hours spent. Also, Brian's parents today. So the laundry home, the police moved back the line. It closed basically the end of the street. So now news media is only allowed in neighbors' yards if they'll allow them there. You know, like the Brian Enten from the local news there is literally camped out in the house next door. And he's also in their backyard.
The neighbors are even sitting outside. I saw this cute little picture. This neighbor is sitting outside in her chair with a notepad. And she's just like taking notes of what she sees.
Oh, that's amazing.
Isn't that adorable?
That is adorable. Like,
here's the thing. Like, I know this whole case, it's devastating. And obviously there's so much pain around it. And it's triggering for so many people because of all of the ways that we identify with the victim. Mm-hmm. However, one of the things that personally, like, I have kind of come to love with true crime is the way that there's this, like, unity in people saying, oh, fuck no. Like, no.
Not on my watch.
You're fixing this. And yeah. It's so, I don't know, empowering to know that there are people that will stop what they're doing to help. Whether that's some random person on Reddit sending pizzas to the people protesting outside of the laundry's home, or neighbors camping out, opening up their homes to reporters, people searching constantly, and even like our listeners, people are sharing all the time in Discord and on Facebook things that they're seeing and trying to help contribute here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I guess that's just like, I'm just kind of feeling like all sentimental right now.
No, the response to this case as a whole has been absolutely amazing. I know that people will just want to help, and you're right. I mean, it's whether it's the sweet little old neighbor who's sitting outside in her chair with a little notepad, or, you know, people on the ground or others, it's definitely brought a sense of community for sure.
That's one of the reasons why I think it's really great to be in our little group, because it feels like we're doing something. We're not just sitting around and waiting, but it feels like we're, you know, helping in a way. Mm-hmm.
Now, also earlier today, Brian's parents, and, you know, as I just said, everything's cordoned off. So any movements in or out, they're well observed. So mm-hmm. Brian's parents left in the red truck, and they actually went into downtown Orlando. And interestingly enough, and I never in a million years, guys, would have thought to put two and two together on this, but they were within a mile and a half of Jose Baez's office. And if you guys remember good old Jose, he was the one who represented Casey Anthony and then also former Patriots wide receiver Aaron Hernandez. He kind of specializes in I'm fucked cases. And so people just thought that it would have just been a logical decision for them to contact him and try to get him. Also, Jose Baez just absolutely lives for high profile cases. That's what he does. But I thought it was really interesting.
So gross.
He is so gross. But I did find it interesting that Jose Baez himself ended up putting out later this evening, as that started to go viral, a post that he's like, no, I have had no contact with the laundry family and I will not be representing anyone from that family. Like, you Holy know cow. That you are a shitbag when Jose Baez will not even come like 10 feet.
And he's like not exactly a good judge of character when it comes to good parents or not, right. You know, Casey Anthony being a good example.
Right. True.
Oh my word.
So that pretty much sums it up.
Imagine the scale of being like, Casey Anthony, yes. These people, absolutely
right. You're officially worse than Casey Anthony.
Ouch. Yeah. Can you like just ugh, ow.
Yeah. But yeah, so that pretty much sums it up, guys. And then as far as verified credible news. As I mentioned earlier, I just wanted to kind of point out sightings that have been confirmed and things that have been debunked. So there was a whole day where people talked about that Mobile, Alabama, the body that was found in the Walmart dumpster. As much as I would have loved for Brian Laundry to have ended up dead behind a Walmart dumpster. Then there was the other trail cam, which a lot of people believe to be the strongest lead. Night vision. It was a man with a backpack. People were able to, I mean, confirm visually. I was one of them. I was like, oh shit, this may be an actual valid, credible lead.
It looked kind of legit, I will admit.
People even did an overlay of Brian's side profile from a picture on Instagram and put it over this person on the Okaloosa trail cam. Matched perfectly, almost pixel to pixel. But the FBI came out and said, nope, we went, we searched, we looked, nothing. No trace of anything.
It's still sketchy. That's still weird, you know? Mm-hmm. Some dude with a backpack just staring up at a tree in the middle of the night. That is a weird thing, but yeah, weird. Not him.
Also, there was a big kerfluffle over a Yelp account for Steven Bertolino.
Felt so bad.
Yeah. Wasn't that heartbreaking, Brittany? You're the specialist here, so you can talk about that.
Okay, so as much as Steven Bertolino can just go and like
eat a bag of dicks.
Basically, I was going to say choke on one, but like you beat me to it. I wasn't sure if that was appropriate. But yeah, as much as I hate him and hope his business suffers immensely for a long time, he's not exactly someone who's been great at social media. So he never claimed his Yelp page. When you have a business, you actually are supposed to go on Yelp and Google and any other places and prove that, hey, that's actually my business right there that's on your website. Let me claim that so I can manage it, you know, and make sure that it's my information and not a competitor doing something or a customer adding the wrong information. Mm-hmm. It's my business. I control it. Steven decided to just not on all of that. And what that means is that it was just like public domain. And that means that anyone with a Yelp account can go in and make changes. For fun, you can do this too. Any unclaimed Yelp page, Google page, you name it, you can upload just about whatever you want to it. And someone wanted Steven to hurt probably a little more. And they uploaded a picture of Gabby to that page. And it, you know, sparked some controversy because at first glance, if you don't know that, hey, this was like an unclaimed page, at first glance, it looks like the lawyer of this piece of shit family uploaded the photo of the girl that their son murdered.
That his client murdered, yeah.
It's disgusting if that's what happened. It's not what happened. It was some random person because it's just an open page. Anyone can do it. Mm-hmm. But that actually triggered Gabby's family to send an immediate kind of notification to Steven to be like, you better take this down, you piece of shit.
Mm-hmm. But alas, it didn't happen that way. And I feel really, really bad for the Petito attorney.
I do too. I am sure he has never seen anything like this before. Just the way that Bertolino has carried this entire thing, all of his little weird statements, mm-hmm. and the timing of it all. Yeah.
The timing of his statements, they've been absolutely vile. They have been absolutely vile.
Beyond insensitive, and that says a lot coming from me.
It really does. Guys, you don't know her very well, but like, let me tell you, if she says something is insensitive, it's vicious.
Come on now.
Oh.
Yeah, okay, so another completely, I guess, was this debunked? The cross is where her body was found?
So that is actually true. It came out that pictures kind of surfaced of crosses where Gabby's body had been found, the exact spot. And it was really sweet. And it was actually a really beautiful little tribute. And people were wondering what that meant, who did it. At first, people said that it was her father. Investigators, actually, people who found her body and investigated the scene, actually created that and placed that there.
So beautiful. Going back to that whole area, yes, it's a touristy town, but take the tourists out of it. That is a very tight-knit community.
Yes.
The people there, they don't get cases like this. This is not a large, big city. This case, those investigators will carry with them forever. There mm-hmm. probably won't be something like this that they ever have to deal with again, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. But I'm not surprised whatsoever that was done by investigators in the area. It's mm-hmm. just such an incredible place, and the community's amazing.
And then also another thing that people have been talking about quite a bit is Brian's social media activity since he's been on the lam. I mean, that's really what he is. He's fleeing right now, right? Like, he's actively mm-hmm. evading law enforcement. So he's had a bit of a follower change on Instagram, going up and down. And what's happening is he hasn't actually been active, to my understanding, is that people who are friends with him have blocked him, deleted him, unfollowed him, removed him, so on and so forth. So
probably
that
for good reason, right? If you had like a weird connection to some guy that did this and you were in his following list, I don't know about you, but I would block the shit out of that person too. Like, I would want to like draw my line in the sand of like, I barely knew this person. Do not come at me. Like, I can totally see why people would want to block and why that would look kind of suspicious, but I would want to keep my distance too.
Yeah, big time.
Especially because going back to like how great social media can be, this is also the kind of the downside. When there are cases like this, sometimes this like online army of sleuths go off like the beaten path and they go after entirely the wrong people. Mm-hmm. And there's been some really heartbreaking examples of that in the past. I think it makes sense for people to want to block him to not fall victim to angry sleuths, basically.
No, absolutely. Could not agree more. Now let's talk about the unconfirmed sightings. So currently there are three. Well, actually, there are a lot, but we're going to narrow it down to three. Someone apparently took a picture of him in Mexico. That has been unconfirmed, guys. Before, you know, that's going viral, people are saying, oh my God, he's in Mexico. Unconfirmed. And then Toronto, a flight attendant, actually, who was staying over, you know, the one night over in Toronto, saw a man in a hotel that she was staying at that looked just like Brian. She opened her door. There he was. He was leaving. She said he appeared flustered and he was with another man. She actually reported it to the hotel clerk. She called the U.S. FBI, all authorities, Northport, as well as a handful of United States news organizations. She claims that she is 100% sure that it was Brian Laundrie. But again, guys, it is unconfirmed. Unconfirmed.
But keep in mind, too, there was nothing wrong with what she did. If you think you saw this mm-hmm. guy, you should be calling as many different agencies as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. I believe that she believes it. Mm-hmm. But we are not going to talk about any other facts related to it until authorities or some sort of verified source says, yeah, no, there is some substance to this.
Thank you. Exactly. And then the third one, and this actually was like live and breaking just as Brittany and I sat down to start recording this episode. And I've been keeping an eye on it since we've actually been recording. I keep rolling over and checking. And my little friend has disappeared, it appears.
Okay, well, we can give a synopsis. So there were two little helicopters. Mine was just a loser medical one. Robin picked the cool one. It was the sheriff's helicopter. And this helicopter was basically circling in this area, not the Carlton Reserve. It was this other area. It's called
Citrus County. Yeah, Crystal River.
And it was just kind of like just the same loop, basically, right?
Mm-hmm. No, it's made like figure eights and everything. So I saw on Facebook where Citrus County is an area in Florida, and someone said, possible Brian Laundrie sighting in Crystal River. Be on the lookout. Report anything that you see to the CCSO. And so I was looking, and I noticed in comments, people who live in the area are seeing ungodly amounts of law enforcement, police, low-flying helicopters, spotlights in different areas. So my thinking was, and what I do frequently, okay, let's go to Flight Radar 24, and let's look at live air traffic. What's going on in the air? I initially picked a loser and then pawned that off on Brittany and gave her the medevac. You're welcome. And then I found a helicopter and it was N911KV. And it's making, guys, its flight path was batshit. I mean, 1,005 loops. I mean, it was like absolutely all over the place. Over Crystal River and went over Marion Parks and then it ended up going north.
What's weird too though is the level it was flying at. So normally a helicopter, you know, especially in a bigger city, you don't want to be that loud at night. Like you've got to have a pretty decent reason to be flying low. This one, the lowest I saw go was 1800 feet. That's pretty low. That's going to wake you up if you're sleeping. That's low. You would be able to see quite a bit from the air. At that level, I would say, I don't know like what a normal height would be, but over 6,000 feet is what my guess would be is like a typical, you want to be up a little bit higher.
You would think that if you're that low flying, like you told me, everyone's going to hear you.
And it's in that same little area. However, being devil's advocate, yeah, we can't assume that that's anything yet. It could be so yep. many things. It could be, I mean, they could even be helping transport a COVID patient and they're just waiting for an open spot at a hospital, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, they're another trying to manhunt. Stay awake. Maybe they're bored. Maybe they're just like flying around because it sounds better than being at a desk. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be another manhunt. It could be, again, COVID. Most of Florida's hospitals are at capacity with the ER and have no free beds. But I was able to at least verify that there is some semblance, some sort of helicopter activity going over in that general vicinity. Someone claimed that they saw him fishing, potentially.
There's all kinds of these weird things in that area. They're probably a lot like us. If I had a helicopter flying above where I'm at right now, I would be like all kinds of conspiracy theorists as well. So I think it plays into why people think they're seeing him everywhere. This is good. Everyone is on the watch for him. I actually think we will find him. I think he will be caught. I don't think that he is going to make it easy. Mm-hmm. And I definitely don't think you would see him like at a resort or doing anything that would be in the public's view. I think he knows how to be off the beaten path. He knows how to kind of, you know, rough it for a while. And he knows the basics of hiking. If there's someone who can survive outside of the city for a while and really piss off law enforcement, mm-hmm. it's probably this guy.
And I don't want to add to unnecessary speculation or misinformation at all. So again, sure. Completely unconfirmed. Do not know what the F it that could even be. But definitely there is some really strange, bizarre activity going on over the Crystal River, Marion Park area currently. Another, just like one other piece of information that came out today that was super interesting, guys. So Frank Figliuzzi, who is the former assistant director for counterintelligence at the FBI.
Sorry, what was that name one more time? I just need to hear it. It was Frank, my ears.
Frank Figliuzzi. Figliuzzi is a former assistant director. You're more than welcome to the counterintelligence at the FBI. He believes that Brian Laundrie's parents will actually be summoned to a grand jury soon. I know that you, me, our entire Patreon, the entire world is just like, why are his parents not in jail? We could be seeing it, guys, because apparently, and you know, I trust an FBI officer's view on this. There is no parental child privilege. So now, because we have an indictment, it's a federal case. So therefore, they could actually be put in front of a grand jury. And then if they're not going to cooperate in front of a federal grand jury, they can and will get charged with contempt or obstruction.
Thank God, because I was starting to feel really sad about Florida laws more than usual, even. Because when I was first looking at this, this was right about the 12th. When you and I were digging into Florida law, like, okay, what theoretically could happen here, depending on how things go? Had this not gone federal, what could have happened is, so in Florida, if your child commits a crime, as long as it's not a first or second degree big crime, like if it's just something a little less serious, you're totally good to help them get away with it. You're protected even. There's a statute that covers you for that. Had Gabby's death been ruled as manslaughter or an accident even, his parents would never have to report for anything. Even if they had taken Brian and dropped him off at the airport, sent him with cash and said, have a great life, son. We love you. Just keep in touch when you can. Like that, they would have been entirely fine. How insane is that?
Absolutely crazy. And then now that it's federal. And guys, keep in mind, this is for unauthorized use of a debit card. He took her car between August 30th and September 1st and then started, you know, using it. And it totaled more than $1,000, which makes this a federal crime. And Frank Figliuzzi said, quote, in an interview with NBC.
Sir, what was that last name one more time?
Frank Figliuzzi said in an interview with NBC News, quote, if it's her credit card, presumably, that means that authorities are convinced that Gabby was unable to give permission to use her card. That means that they are closer to fixing the time of death. That's why you're seeing unauthorized use. She was likely dead at that time.
It's definitely fair to say we're going to keep learning more. Every single day, more is coming out. People are sharing more. The police are closing in, I assume. And the FBI is now all over this as well. And they have the parents on their radar. This is not ending anytime soon.
No. So one piece of information, guys, that I did miss, that I did very much want to insert here again, is in the Kylan Schultz and Crystal Turner case, the two women, they were married to one another. They were found
recently.
Yeah.
It was their honeymoon.
Mm-hmm. They were found shot to death, raped and shot to death. in a campsite. And the reason why this case actually even came kind of like in the peripheral of this case is that they reported to friends that there was a, quote, creepy man who was intimidating them at their campsite. And it just so happens that the Brian Laundry and Gabby Petito case overlapped because the domestic violence call on August 12th put Gabby Petito and Brian Laundry in Moab, and they actually visited the same co-op that Kylan worked at.
Yeah, and of course, they were also living in a camper van as well. And so everyone is looking at this like, could this be related?
And per the Grand County, Utah Sheriff's Office, after looking at it, I don't know what information they have, but they say that it is not, they are unrelated to one another.
Yeah, I wish they would tell us as to why they felt that way, definitely. One thing that would be interesting to find out is if Brian and Gabby traveled with a gun. I don't know that that's something that's been discussed or reported yet.
There is an older post from Gabby on her, I believe, TikTok. It was a video on a TikTok, and she actually has a gun.
Oh, okay. First of all, it's super smart. Mm-hmm. Where they were at, anywhere they were traveling, not just for protection in general, but the wildlife in the Jackson Hole area this time of year is so, it's so dangerous. Like, I cannot stress enough how dangerous it is to be camping in just a tent in the area of Grand Teton National Park. I would personally never do it. Ever. Ever, ever, ever. So dangerous. You would want to have a gun to protect yourself from bears and wolves. For sure. Probably mountain lions, too.
That's crazy. I can't even begin to imagine. But yeah, there is a video on Gabby's TikTok where she does have a gun. Was that a gun that they carried with them? I have no idea. Don't even want to contribute to misinformation there. But I was thinking this as you just brought this up. I was actually just thinking this, and I was not going to say it because, you know, I don't want anybody to think it's like off color or whatever. But like, if it comes out that Gabby Petito was shot to death, there is no way that you can convince me, and I will go to my grave even believing something that's not true, that Brian did not have anything to do with their murders too, if that is the case. Like, my brain cannot compute that.
I get it. And the coincidence of them being in the same area, so many different ways, the camper van piece of it and all that, I get it. But the nice part about there being a gun in this is that there would be ballistics, so you would be able to rule those sorts of things out. So you wouldn't have to go to your grave. There would be evidence to help you decide.
Well, Moab Police, well, the Grand County of Utah, the police there, said that there was no relation between the two cases before Gabby's body, unfortunately, was found. So I wonder...
Definitely way too early for them to say there was nothing to do with it.
I feel like they're holding on to information, and that's why I also wanted to bring this up, is that I also do plan to cover this case very, 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 very much in depth. It's also incredibly sad. And, you know, one of the big themes in the media about the Gabby Petito case is the missing white woman syndrome, where the media focuses on beautiful white women, or white children for that matter, instead of people of color, BIPOC, indigenous people, just in the area alone of where Gabby Petito, you know, in the Wyoming and all of that. I think like over the last like 8 or 9 years, over 700 indigenous women have gone missing and or been murdered.
It's heartbreaking.
And you see no media coverage.
A problem in regards to like the bias that's out there. However, I think we're capable of handling multiple different things at once, right? Like mm-hmm. the issues at hand with this case. Mm-hmm. The obvious racial disparities that exist in reporting. It just is. And it sucks.
It's absolutely disgusting. Yes. Yeah.
The disparities exist. It's wrong. Absolutely. And I think it has opened up the conversation too in regards to domestic violence. You have so many people coming forward and saying, yeah, I was in a toxic relationship, or I am in a toxic relationship. And this case really opened my eyes to that. There are so many like moving pieces here, and lots of accusations of, well, what about this missing person? And what about this one? Guys, yeah, there is an actual issue at hand with this. But I think it, again, going back to the whole social media conversation, I think we can start to be that change. What if this is the case where we can all say, well, we can all come together and use social media to help move these things along? I personally have been able to like see a shift since this case. I feel like I'm seeing more missing person cases getting reported that have been open for a while that I had never seen before. I think we're seeing the start of a shift. To carry it through, we have to be part of that solution too.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
One of the things that I really appreciate about this podcast is it's very democratic in the way that if you have a case that needs attention, if you see something and it's new to you or it doesn't look like it's getting enough attention out there, this is like an open door place. Like, send it our way. We can look at it. We can discuss it in Discord. We can help at least in our own little community. And then hopefully others do the same thing. And together, to be all working towards that same common goal, I think this could be the case that helps change that for so many.
I really, really hope it does. And I'm so glad to see that that particular point be made time and time again across all media channels, even national news. And New York Times even just did an article on it. But yeah, as Brittany said, you know, if you have a case that you feel is not getting enough spotlight, please bring it to our attention. And, you know, to be perfectly frank, the Lori Vallow case just had so many twists and turns in it that it felt like I was kind of forced into doing constant coverage of it, right? Because every day it was like something else there for a while. And
it was a mess. It is a mess.
It is a mess. I have more time now. You know, the Lori Vallow case is kind of like at a little bit of a break at the moment, like some little things here and there, but it's not like the constant media spew that it once was. So I would like to cover Tamler Horsford's. Her death absolutely wrecked me. And I can't believe that. I mean, there are obvious unanswered questions with her death. The Black woman who went to the sleepover with her white friends, and then she died via falling off a second floor balcony. But the way that she was posed and whatnot. And she also had blunt force trauma. There's something going on there. That case. Multiple others that just have not gotten the media coverage that they deserve. Also talking about the Kylan and Crystal case out of Moab too. They were lesbians. So their case, I mean, a double rape and murder in a town where not a lot really happens. Why didn't that get more coverage? So I very much would like to, and do plan to, now that I have the bandwidth and have the time, move forward with a lot more cases that aren't getting coverage.
I think that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that other podcasts and other YouTube channels and things like that, like I hope they look at it and say, it sucks that there is such prevalent discrimination in reporting, but what if we can make a change in our small little area? And it even can make a difference on a personal level. If you see a story out there in the news, like it, share it, do something. You can play a part in that too. It doesn't just have to be, you know, media. It can be the users as well. And I think that's what I've really personally taken out of this case about Gabby Petito, is mm-hmm. that the average person has made a really big difference too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Even just sharing, if you have even 50 friends on Facebook, guys, even just sharing an article about a missing person can make all the difference in the world.
So let's take our platform and let's help with that. So help us help make the change that we all want to see.
Mm-hmm. So that's it for all the updates, guys. Do you have any final thoughts, Brittany, on this? Like, any questions that you have as far as like what's going on? Like, for me, my question that I have is why the police are continuously checking the Carlton Reserve. Like, I cannot compute that. I do not believe Brian is probably there.
No, I don't think he would be so close to so many suburbs, and this, it just doesn't seem to fit with his whole thing of get off grid. It just doesn't make sense to me. I don't think he's there either. I'm also very curious that day after we think he murdered Gabby, he went up to the dam. I want to understand if a dive team has been deployed yet to the dam itself, because I feel like there's going to be some evidence that he went out of his way, so far out of his way, to go up into the woods and away. Was he hiding things? Was he disposing of things? I hope that there's still some searches underway up in Wyoming looking for anything and retracing his steps as for what happened immediately after we believe Gabby was murdered.
And we also have to think too, we didn't discuss this earlier when we went over it, but Miranda Baker and her boyfriend, who picked Brian up and he was clean and whatnot, he said he'd been camping. Guys, he only had a tarp and a backpack and an empty backpack. Mm-hmm. Why did he just have an empty backpack and a tarp? What would he need for that? And then one of my FBI friends said that the term remains. And then also a friend who works
great
in the coroner's
plug, by
office.
By the way, one of my FBI friends. But anyways, continue.
If only I were that important. But they both confirmed that the very strategic, specific language of using the word remains typically means that the body, say, right, was not found untouched, unscathed in one piece. And that can mean multiple things, dismemberment or even animal predation. Like, you know, her body had been potentially in that particular area all the way from, say, the 27th through the 19th. Now, Brittany's already discussed the wildlife in that area. That's a considerable amount of time for a human, a body to stay in one area with that much wildlife. That's also what that could mean. But either way, that was very specific language as a whole. So he had a tarp and an empty backpack. Why did he go so far out of his way and then circle back to the campsite?
Yeah. And now that we know that the FBI's on it, I can imagine we're going to start seeing some of those like cell phone pinging things, just like the Lori Vallow case.
The cast team. Yeah.
Yeah. Way later down the line is when we got the information about Chad and Alex and all the different pinging that was going on then. Be patient. Don't buy into the conspiracy theories that people are putting out there yet. Don't give attention to things that haven't been confirmed. More will come. That's just what happens with cases like this. So just be patient. Let law enforcement do their thing. So far, I actually don't think they've let us down yet.
Maybe Northport a little bit. They did kind of lose track of him entirely.
They're okay. They did lose. They did lose the only person of interest. I kind of forgot about that part.
They did. So maybe Northport has let like the whole world down. But, you know, besides that. So that is it for today, guys. Thank you once again for joining us. This case has impacted both Brittany and myself very heavily, just immensely. And it brings out so many good questions and discussions worth having on the ethics, even, of the true crime genre and podcasting. So we look forward to further delving into that in the future. Again, you can find us at wesawthedevil.com. From there, you can find all of our social media accounts. Please feel free to give us a follow. Keep up with news. Hit up wsdlove.com if you would like to enter to get some free shit. And I will pick a winner at the end of this month. To our patrons, I love each and every one of you. Again, last day of the month, I will have that Patreon-only episode out. And please sign up if you would like to do the Halloween gift exchange, which so much fun. And again, if you're interested in financially backing or supporting the show, you can do so at our Patreon, which is patreon.com/wesawthedevil. The next episode is going to be a continuation of the Suzanne Morphew case and the arrest affidavit that came out because, guys, if you had any inkling of a doubt that Barry Morphew was guilty of killing his wife, Suzanne, if you were able to bypass all of the coincidences from the dart, him chasing her, the cell phone pings, the five different trash runs, the constant lying and lies that he made, as well as the probable discovery that she was having an affair, this arrest affidavit should absolutely just cease all doubt for you. So I will be picking that up over the next week or so. Again, that was about a 139-page document that I've been poring over to basically recreate and just give you guys the condensed but yet full-pictured version of what we are looking at. And a lot of new stuff has come out and been divulged from that arrest affidavit. So that will be the next episode. But that's it for today, guys. Until next crime.